for him, and then, when it ran out, he followed the others through a new door where each of them was treated with counterseptic powders. "Sit and pray, my children. The test is coming," they were told. As they sat, their heads bowed, a servitor came around with a clipper to shave their heads. Karkul felt the metal work its way over his head in strips, watched clots of his wet, matted hair fall to the ground at his feet. A hand brushed his scalp, which was alive to sensation in a new and extraordinary way. It skimmed the last of his hair away from his head. It was not the hand of a servitor. He looked up. "Come, brother," Zephan said. Karkul stood. He was dressed in a long kirtle of brown wool that hung in folds to his knees. "It is time to see if you are pure." Karkul was led, bare-legged, into another room. There was blood on the floor. A body was being dragged by the heels out to the left. A man in a black gown and mask stood in the middle of the room. His only other ornament was a steel aquila hanging from his neck. He beckoned Karkul forward. "Kneel," a voice from behind him commanded. Karkul knelt. He kept his head bowed. To the side, in a neighbouring room, a man was talking. There was a shout and a scream, and then silence. It seemed to take an age. Then a door opened.
"Is he ready?"
a voice said. The voice was deep and resonant. "Yes, confessor." The footsteps moved forward. Karkul saw guard boots, scuffed and worn.
"I am Harkon Pitt," the voice said. "Look up, my child."
Confessor Harkon Pitt wore military dress. From his belt hung a trio of grenades and pouches for powder packs, and there was a sword-length bayonet in a sheath at his side. The strap of a lasgun was thrown over his shoulder, and marks of rank were upon his right arm, a triple skull. He had a rich star banner draped about his shoulders and a las pistol holstered at his hip. But it was his face that made Karkul start. Confessor Pitt's eyelids had been stitched open. His eyeballs stared out, bloodshot and unblinking. His voice was a gravelly rasp.
"What is your name, child?"
Karkul spoke, but his voice was not the frightened croak that it had been last time he had heard himself speak. It was a voice full of confidence and strength. It was a voice with conviction.
"Karkul!"
Karkul heard someone behind him and felt metal touch the back of his scalp. He flinched for a moment at the sudden cold, but kept looking into the mad, staring eyes.
"There is a gun pressed to the back of your head," Confessor Pitt said.
He smiled kindly.
"But do not fear, my child. The faithful have nothing to fear, not even from death itself."
He took Karkul's right hand and held it between his own.
"I shall ask you some questions. Answer them truthfully. If you lie, I shall know, and the payment for lies is death. Do you understand, my child?"
Karkul nodded, and the man before him smiled.
"Good. Now, close your eyes. Faith often comes to us in the darkness. Shut your eyes to the world and look into your heart for the one true way."
Karkul did as he was instructed, and then the questions began.
"Do you believe in the future of humanity?"
"I do,"
Karkul spoke solemnly. The gun was still pressed into the base of his skull, but the metal had warmed now, and he did not flinch at its touch.
"Do you believe in the one true emperor, divine and exultant?"
"I do," he said.
His hand had been sweating, his heart thunderous, but now he felt calm. He did not fear the gunshot that would end his life, did not fear the darkness or the light. The questions went on.
Do you believe in the temple of the sacred emperor that once stood on this planet and will stand here once more?
Karkul pressed his eyes closed. Yes. In the darkness of his own mind, he saw a golden light, radiant, pure, divine. His hand was cool, the hands about it pressed tenderly on his own. Karkul spoke fervently now, defiant, believing, absolved of all his previous heresy and failings.
Do you want to cleanse those who befoul our world?
Yes.
Do you want to travel the stars, to return the Imperium to the one true way?
I do, my father.
Will you kill and burn those who stand against us?
Just give me the word, Karkul said. I have killed the unholy and will do so again. I shall drown them in slime. I will eat their flesh.
Thank you, Confessor Pitt said.
There was a long pause.
Now stand, my child, and step forward as a brother.
Karkul opened his eyes and realized that the gun muzzle no longer rested against the skin of his head. Confessor Pitt lifted and embraced him. The ragged white beard was soft as he kissed Karkul on both cheeks. He held him tight as a brother.
You have been reborn. You are no longer a child wandering lost through the world. You have been initiated. Henceforth, you shall be known as Brother Karkul, with the rank of gallant, and taught the lesser passwords. Remember these, for your life might depend on it.
Karkul looked to his right arm and saw a single skull badge stitched into the cloth. The man embraced Karkul again.
Welcome, gallant Karkul, into the Brotherhood.
How can I serve you?
You will serve as the Emperor served mankind, with blood.
My blood is yours, Karkul said.
And body.
I will do whatever you ask.
Then come, my brother. The time for sacrifice is near.
Chapter 9. Radgard Howe found the Bedreedzor having supper on the lower terrace of the Calvert Gardens.
Radgard, is that you?
The Bedreedzor called as Howe approached.
You were expecting me?
The Bedreedzor did not turn.
No, but no one else walks as heavily as you.
You do not sound pleased.
You only come to see me when there is bad news. So, tell me, what disaster is about to befall us?
Howe did not answer, but spoke with his accustomed brusqueness.
Not painting today?
Not today, the Bedreedzor replied. A ruler has both the realms of the soul and the hand to govern.
I can take care of the second,
Howe answered. The Bedreedzor had a single honey cake on a gold-worked porcelain plate. The cake had been cut into four. One of the pieces was missing. The Bedreedzor took a sip of recaf. He appeared irritated by the man's interruption.
I hope this is important.
Of course, Howe said,
and pulled a chair out for himself and sat down. Rudgard Howe was the chief enforcer on Portents, an ugly, broad slab of a man whose forebears had come to the planet with the Adeptus Arbites 6 generations earlier. He still wore the black Arbites carapace handed down through the family.
Are you aware of what is going on out there?
What do you mean?
Out there, south of the starport, in the agro-defence facility, that idiot Shalia has landed an army.
The Pedreedzor remained unmoved.
Not an army. They are Fritiris militia.
Same thing, Howe stated.
No, actually, it's not. But as an outlander, I doubt you'd understand. The decree passive declares no man can bear arms for the ecclesiarchy. The men of the Brotherhood have landed under peculiar law. It's ecclesiarchy business, not mine.
Well, they're my problem. I have 600 enforcers, and they're barely enough to control the Evercity. But with the influxes as well, every time another lighter lands on this planet, 1,000 more criminals arrive. I've given up arresting them. We just shoot them now.
Then stay away from their camp. They will not cause any trouble.
I've been an enforcer for a long time, and one thing I know is that men and guns means trouble.
Chief Enforcer Howe, I do not implore you to ask me questions. Everyone is landing armies on Potence. These men are the army of a crusade. They are Fraternis Militia. There is official sanction from the Cardinal himself.
Howe eyed the honey cake for a moment. I'm concerned about Lady Bianca.
She's sick. I have sent my own physician to care for her.
Her life wards have been found dead.
Oh, dear. I hope they did not catch anything from her.
They were shot.
How unfortunate.
Howe read between the lines.
So I can put the squad who were watching her on other duties.
Yes, I'll let you know when she's feeling better.
Where is she?
None of your business.
Howe sat back. He did not judge. It was one way he kept his job.
If any of the rich stars had a backbone, they'd be the only one.
Of course,
the Pedrizzo said, taking another quarter of the cake and putting it into his mouth in one piece. He chewed for a moment.
But backbone or not, they're rich stars.
They're lesser sons of lesser sons, said Howe. A family needs to weed out the weak. My brother, for example.
I remember your brother, or what was left of him.
It was what our father wanted.
Howe grinned. It was not a pleasant sight.
You are funny, Pedrizzo. It does not change the fact that it's a miracle some of those rich stars survived infancy.
I'd have exposed them.
They're useless. If they can't hang on to their planets, why the throne should we take them in here?
The Pedrizzo said nothing. He took another sip of recaf. His face appeared to say that he agreed with his chief enforcer, even if he didn't agree with the manner in which the opinion was expressed.
The rich stars have always held together. We're fed family loyalty with our mother's milk.
I wish you'd told me about the Fraternis.
I think they're calling themselves the Brotherhood.
I don't care. They're a bunch of armed and crazed fanatics.
Of course they're armed.
No, I mean they have heavy weapons and armoured vehicles.
Good, the Pedrizzo said. I hope so. We need all the help we can get.
I thought the Ecclesiarchy were not allowed to have men under arms.
They are not.
Rudgard Howe lifted his eyebrows.
So?
The Pedrizzo sighed.
You're so slow, Rudgard. The Cardinal has declared a crusade.
Is that why the Cardinal is coming to see you?
This time it was the Pedrizzo who looked surprised.
He is?
Yes. He's brought a guard of sisters with him.
Send him away.
He will insist.
Who rules this planet? Me or him?
You do, Howe said.
So, the Pedrizzo said, send him away.
Celestian Simona went forward to announce herself at the gates of the Calvert.
Open your doors. His Holiness Cardinal Archbishop Zerium has come. Do not bar his entry.
The doors swung silently open. The Calibaneer in full dress uniform bowed as the Cardinal's grave palanquin moved into the Calvert courtyard. A lone figure stepped out from the tall glass doors and moved quickly down the steps. It was Chantal, the Pedrizzo's equerry.
"Greetings, Cardinal. I am afraid that the Pedrizzo is busy."
He tried to sidestep Celestian Simona. She was too quick for him. He yelped as her power-armoured fist closed painfully on his shoulder.
"Cardinal Zerium is the manifestation of the Emperor in this system. The Pedrizzo cannot be too busy to see him."
"I will deal with this," Zerium declared.
He stepped down from the palanquin and put up his hand. Simona only reluctantly let the equerry go.
"The Pedrizzo has forbidden the sisters to enter the Calvert," Chantal insisted. "They are the daughters of the Emperor. I do not think the Pedrizzo touts their faith. It is just that there are many precious pieces within the palace and the contemplatorium. He has never liked men or women of war inside."
Celestian Simona looked to the Cardinal, and Zerium nodded.
"Thank you for your protection, Celestian. I will be safe now, I am sure, and perhaps the Pedrizzo could provide an escort for my return journey."
"I will personally ensure that, Your Holiness. Let me go and break the news to the Pedrizzo."
"I will come with you," Zerium said, and stepped around the equerry.
Chantal had to run back to attempt to get in front of the Cardinal.
"Let me go and announce you, Your Eminence."
But the old man set a quick pace and was deaf to Chantal's entreaties. The Cardinal's short black staff tap-tapped on the marble floors, and the equerry did not dare lay hands upon this eminent guest. As the Cardinal mounted the black marble steps that led to the lower entrance, a dark figure stepped out of the shadows and halted the Cardinal in his tracks. It was Chief Enforcer Howe. He graced the Cardinal with his ugliest smile. The Cardinal stopped abruptly.
"Ah, you," he said. "Evening, Cardinal. Are you ready for the festival?"
Cardinal Zerium forced a smile.
"I am always ready. How about you? I hear there have been explosions in the city."
"Nothing more than we can handle."
"You sound very relaxed about it all. All I hear from Vettor is of the horrors of the Tent City."
"Really? What does he tell you?"
"Starvation, violence, murder. Does he exaggerate?"
"I do not know. I have never been there."
The Cardinal blinked.
"You have not been?"
"No, the Ever-City takes up all of my time."
"But there are hundreds of thousands of people out there on the plains. If you do not bring law to their lives, you abandon them to criminals. You should be ashamed of yourself."
Howe laughed.
"I don't do shame. And for the record, I'm the enforcer, not Saint Frecking Arabella. I deal in law, not charity. That's your concern. Have you ever been to the Tent City?"
"Why, no," Zerium said, "but that is not the issue."
Rudgard Howe laughed. "Too mighty for the weak, I see."
Zerium was still fuming when he found the Pedrizzo in the orangery at the west end of the Calvert. The building was a small confection of glass and plasteel set on the top terrace of the gardens. Inside, it was hung with vines and climbers, with heavy, scented black lotus blooms hanging down, their large, bright stamens thick with pollen. There was the faint buzz of insects, though he never saw any, and had the strange impression that they were not real. The Pedrizzo acted as if he had not expected a visitor.
"Ah, Your Holiness," he said. "What a pleasant surprise."
Zerium tap-tapped forward, and Vettor entered behind him.
"Pedrizzo, I am concerned. This morning Vettor told me a dead family was found at the gates of the Ever-City."
"The fates are cruel."
"Not just the fates. Vettor tells me that the guards on the gate would not let them into the Ever-City, that none of the influxers are allowed in."
The Pedrizzo put his hand out to one of his blossoms.
I wish I could do more, but you are well aware that the feast day is almost upon us. The augurs have spoken.
I am aware of that, Zerium said. But the Imperium has entrusted you with the care of this sector. If you gave food to the Tent City, it would be like a gift for the Saint's feast day. What better way to uphold his memory?
The Pedrizzo's gaze seemed to harden.
What do you know of Saint Ignazio?
What Vettel tells me.
And what is that?
I know Saint Ignazio would welcome all his people to the Ever City.
The Pedrizzo snorted at the idea. His face was cold as he said,
We are being overrun by influxes. We have prayed to the Imperium to save us from the enemy, but it seems the soldiers of the Astra Militarum have lost the ability to fight.
Zerium started to speak, but as he did so, one of the Pedrizzo's praisebirds swooped down and settled on a branch above his head. The praisebirds were mechanical creatures of cogs and wheels with blue enamelled feathers. They each had the Rich Star emblem on their chests and had lived in the Calvert as far back as records began. Zerium found them strangely disconcerting, for within their beaks they had vox units, and when they sang, their voices were oddly human. This one had a brass beak and green eyes. It cocked its head and opened its beak.
Seek honour as you act, and you shall know no fear.
The Pedrizzo lifted a finger to it, and it ran its beak along his outstretched digit in an oddly cat-like gesture. The Pedrizzo smiled faintly.
I wish I could do more.
Zerium lost his train of thought for a moment. He was sure there was some hidden message in the songs of the Metal Avians.
Smite those who disbelieve, for they have fallen into darkness.
Can you send that thing away? The Cardinal said. It's hard to concentrate.
The Pedrizzo made a discreet gesture, and the construct put back its long neck, let out a long, screeching call, then spread its metal wings and took flight. The Pedrizzo put a hand on the Cardinal's arm.
I shall see what I can do. It will all happen as the Emperor wishes. The Rich Stars have always been devoted servants of the Golden Throne. The most devoted, I think.
Chapter 10. The day began to darken as the Brotherhood assembled on the plains beyond the Tent City. The massed, brown-clad ranks fell silent as Shalia Starborn, the bringer of news, climbed barefooted onto the back of the Lemon Ross Faith of Our Fathers and prepared to address the faithful. He could feel their gaze upon him. Their mood was expectant. The wind caught his robes as he closed his eyes and felt the spirit of the Emperor settle upon him like an eagle on his shoulder. He inhaled deeply.
Brethren, for 4,000 years we have suffered. The Imperium has suffered. Humanity has suffered. At this moment the fate of our race is in doubt. We are weighed down by the criminals and apes that hang about our neck.
The crowd began to fidget. His heartbeat quickened. His speeches always went like this, a little clumsy and hesitant at first, before finding their route, in the way that water will find a path down from the mountainside. As he started to warm to his theme, his volume and tempo began to rise and quicken. Within minutes he was shouting, and the crowd was responding with cheers.
Darkness surrounds us, brothers. Shadows encroach upon our world. Dread stalks through holy terror. The foundations of the Imperial Palace tremble. The gallows cluster itself falls to darkness. It is at this moment that the God Emperor calls out to us. He cries for help. Will you help him? Aye, 100,000 voices chorused back. Will you fight for him? Aye!
The words rolled over him, louder and more passionate now. Some lifted las rifles into the air.
Will you return his holy church back to its rightful place? Will you throw down the unrighteous?
The Brotherhood answered with resounding words. At the end, there were flecks of foam at the sides of Shalia's mouth and in his beard.
Will you kill his enemies? We shall,
his army answered as one. In the distance over the plain, he could see the Acropolis of the Ever-City. At the top of the rock stood the ancient cathedral. Its bronze roof gleamed gold with setting sunlight. Shalia pointed over his shoulder.
They cannot hear you, he roared.
100,000 voices roared back.
We shall, they shall die.
The voices were like thunder. As he spoke, files of transports began to make their way among the bands of the Fratiris. The crowd's voices made the earth beneath their feet tremble. And when all was ready, Shalia Starborn lifted his arms wide and took their hatred into himself. He let them chant, and then, at last, he held up his hands for silence.
The time for violence has come, he announced. Brothers, are you ready to die for the Emperor?
They answered with another roar. Squad by squad, the gallants of Pitt's company pulled themselves up into the vehicles. There was a struggle to be the first. Karkle elbowed the others aside, shoved to be in Confessor Pitt's own truck. The Confessor stood on a metal crate. His bloodshot eyeballs seemed to gleam with excitement.
Brothers, the Emperor is calling you. Today we shall shed blood in his name.
He was their leader, in faith and in arms. He was their father, their captain, their confessor. As the vast convoy set off, he called out and the gallants answered.
The Emperor is our lord, our shield and our knife. Cowards seek compromise, abhor the knight, destroy the heretics.
Karkle chanted in time with the others. His faith kept him warm as the wind whipped dust into their faces. The gallant next to him was a short, older man with careworn cheeks and grey stubble. As the gang fell silent, he clutched at Karkle's arm.
I've heard you. You're from Guardia Rex.
I was, before I was reborn.
The other man nodded.
I thought so, from your accent. Which hive?
Karkle told him, and the man nodded.
I am Gallant Bashin. What is happening?
Greetings, Gallant Bashin. We are going to kill heretics.
Bashin nodded. It was all new to them.
I suppose we must have faith.
Yes, Karkle hissed. The Emperor protects.
Harkon Pitt shouted over his shoulder.
Silence, brothers.
Bashin tried to speak to Karkle again, but this time Karkle would not answer. The truck bounced along. Someone grunted as they hit a pothole and they were thrown about.
Are you lacking in faith?
Harkon Pitt demanded as they hit the main arterial road towards the tent city.
No!
Karkle shouted. All of them were shouting.
Our faith is strong. We believe in the Holy Emperor and the teachings of Saint Vandir.
There was another pothole and grunts of pain and alarm as one of the gallants at the very back was slammed against the tailgate. Confessor Pitt turned on them.
Who does not believe? We believe,
they shouted back. Pitt's face glared down at them.
If any do not believe, then I will find them and root them out, like a cancer from a body.
We believe,
more voices intoned. Karkle was among them. He believed, and to prove it, he returned Pitt's stare.
Doubt is weakness,
Pitt shouted, and they repeated his words.
Doubt is weakness. I shall not question the will of the Emperor. I shall crush the enemies of the true Emperor.
I shall grind my boot into the faces of our enemies. They have despoiled the throne world. They have betrayed his will.
Karkul punched his fist into the air, just like the others.
Test yourselves, Confessor Pitt commanded.
Each gallant found a partner next to them. Karkul avoided Bashin. You were not allowed to struggle with someone you knew. Karkul's partner had black hair and thick eyebrows and intense dark eyes. They each put a hand on the other's shoulder.
Do you believe? The other said.
Karkul had seen what failure to answer in these struggle sessions brought.
I do, he told him. What do you believe?
I believe in the one true emperor. I believe in his holy church and the right of the Fretiris militia to be his strong right arm.
And what is life?
Life is the chance to kill our enemies.
And what is death?
Death is the punishment of the enemies of the holy emperor.
Do you fear death?
I fear not death, for with death I shall be one with the light of the Imperium.
What do you want in life?
Life holds no joy, except for the death of my foes.
The gallant nodded. It was Karkul's turn now. He asked the questions, and the gallant responded with the appropriate creed.
In the truth, brother, they said,
affirming their union, and they held each other's hands.
They wanted nothing but death.
There was order gunfire as the Brotherhood column approached the outskirts of the Tent City. The lead trucks were already pulling over and firing into the camp. The hiss of hard rounds was in the air above their heads. Confessor Pitt seemed oblivious. He showed no fear, but stepped down from the crate and called out,
Here, gallants, take your guns, be glad, for today you shall kill in the Emperor's name.
Crates were thrown open and las rifles were handed from one to another. At the bottom of the crate was a heavy stubber, still wrapped in its factorum oilcloths, with belts of hard rounds coiled neatly beside it.
You,
Pitt shouted, and pointed to the dark-haired man.
Take this gun.
The dark-haired man struggled to pull it up. Karkul leapt up to help, clamping the tripod fitting onto the front of the truck.
Fire it,
Pitt ordered, and Karkul pushed the other man aside.
I fire in the name of the Emperor,
he shouted, and put his shoulder to the back of the weapon and pulled the firing mechanism back fully. The force of the kickback surprised him. The butt cut his lip, and the next time he braced himself and fired off a burst of tracer fire into the enemy positions. He had fired a number of salvos before he even aimed. No one about him seemed to care. They were pulling other stubbers out and passing around bandoliers of power cells and grenades. Karkul could see the Brotherhood vehicles lined up to left and right, rapidly approaching within charging range of the gangers' positions. The night was turned to day by the amount of weaponry brought to bear. Everyone was firing. Las rifles, stubbers, pistols. It did not matter, as long as one had faith in the Emperor. Karkul wanted to kill. As their half-track edged forwards, he looked for a target. Before him, at a checkpoint under a water tower, the gangers had a flakboard barricade. He could see their heads appearing briefly as they fired their weapons over the top, and then there was shooting from the water tower itself. Karkul felt hard rounds whip through the air about him and sprayed the base with return fire. Tracers stabbed out as his gun added to the crescendo of hatred. He had no idea if he had hit anything, but Confessor Pitt clapped him on the back.
Well done, my son. Have faith in the Emperor.
In the truck next to them, someone had a missile launcher. The first shot went wide, but the second hit the flakboard barricade and detonated inside it, showering the enemy with searing fragments of shrapnel. Karkul kept firing at anything he could see. The edge of the city was burning, fabric tearing away from the metal tent struts, ropes giving way under the heat, and hall marquees collapsing in flames. At last, they moved into the city their faces flushed with heat and joy. In a little over 10 minutes, the Brotherhood had swarmed into the tent city. Karkul kept hold of the heavy stubber as the gallants chanted religious slogans, tore down the gates to the food stores, and let the crowds surge in. As they passed under the water tower, Karkul saw the body of a dead ganger lying as he'd fallen, one leg crossed over the other. Another had been cut in half by shrapnel and lay in a pool of gore and guts. Another was slumped forward over a chair, itself broken by his fall. He felt powerful as he saw his enemies dead, emboldened, filled with faith. Some gangers had changed into civilian clothes, while others tried to cover up their tattoos and piercings, but the crowd found them and beat them and turned them over to the Brotherhood. A line was kneeling by the roadside. Confessor Pitt jumped down and drew his pistol. He put it to one man's head and fired, then strode along the line and killed each one.
"Death to our enemies," he shouted, as the line of gangers slammed face down in the dirt.
Then Karkul strung the dead bodies up from the struts of water towers and lamp posts at the crossroads. Vengeance had come, and it was the mad, staring face of Confessor Harkham Pitt. Chapter 11. Archmagos Markwex was a thin man with a mane of cables and a long robe that hid whatever contraption had replaced his legs. He moved too smoothly, as if he were on wheels, and as he crossed the room, he extended a silver mechadendrite to touch Bendict's face in the manner of a blind man. There was a low whine of machinery from his torso.
"Analysis of your genetic code confirms that you are who you say you are," Markwex announced in staccato tones.
The inset plug sockets moved independently of each other, gecko-like. One turned to Mia, while the other examined Bendict.
"You are deficient."
Data processors whirred for a moment.
"Your state is unsatisfactory. A warrior should have four limbs. You have only three."
"I lost my hand."
"It can be replaced. And it will be, in time."
"Time is short, General Bendict."
"Indeed it is. Please let us waste no more time talking about limbs. You have, I see, more than enough for all of us."
The Archmagus's multiple mechadendrites lifted into the air as if to emphasise the fact.
"I am generally short of digits."
"Well, tell me, what defences do we possess within the Evercity?"
"The Evercity is a sacred site, a place of human pilgrimage, of mystic delving. Its function is not defence."
"No, but we need to defend it."
Datacogs whirred for a moment as the eyes continued to move independently of each other. Bendict had met many of Markwix's type. Data and the processing was never their problem, but understanding those who remained fully human was.
"There is a perimeter wall. You will have seen it. It is primarily ornamental. It will not keep out an assault."
"What about the Acropolis?"
"The Mechanicus is not allowed onto the Acropolis without the permission of the Cardinal."
"You will have his permission."
Both of the Magos's eyes turned to Bendict.
"Thank you. In the meantime, I don't know if you are aware that Intake Barracks has its own void shields. So does the Calvert and the Basilica. I inspected them all 10 years ago, and they were in full working order."
"Let's get them checked," Bendict said. Mia nodded. "Anything else?"
"Nothing I am aware of."
"Thank you, Archmagos. Please have maintenance teams prepared to inspect the void generators."
Chief of the forces drawn from the gallows cluster was a Barolan general, a dark-skinned, heavy-sat man with a high-pitched voice named Kamak. Bendict saluted him.
Your unit is in charge of key infrastructure.
Yes, sir. I have units at the starport and Nullum Apec, and then smaller units protecting the grain silos and major generatoria. The Calibaneer are manning the polar defence silos.
Benedict was not interested in the grain silos.
Of key importance to me is the security of the starport.
Kamak nodded.
I don't have enough men to encircle the whole compound, but we have 30 Lemon Russes and a squadron of Hydras well dug in.
Do you think you could repel an orbital assault?
No, but are the Scourged capable of such?
It's possible. I'm afraid to say that intelligence reports heretic guard units among their ranks.
Holy throne!
Yes, I'm afraid so. The Scourged are the most dangerous form of heretic we know. Within their insanity is a malevolent form of intelligence. They're like wild beasts that retain human cunning. We have to assume that even in their degenerate state, they still retain the ability to launch a complex assault from orbit.
Kamak made the sign of the Aquila. Benedict turned to the local defence commander. She was a tough-looking lady, with wide hips and a tight-fitting blue jacket. She had overheard the previous conversation and blanched.
I was unaware that our position was so bad.
I am here to hold this planet. Complacency is a fatal flaw. I am expecting the very worst.
She nodded, then collected herself.
Sorry, sir. I have not introduced myself. My name is General Dominka. I am commander of the Potence Mountain Infantry.
Good to meet you, Benedict said. I'm...
Cadian, she said.
There was a moment's hesitation as she looked to Kamak, then went on.
You're the first Cadian general I've met.
And what do you think?
Well, she said, 4 years ago I would have been impressed. But now...
Perhaps I should be direct. I was born and bred on Potence. And, General, I don't want to lose my planet.
Benedict nodded.
I understand. Trust me, we will do all that we can. But let us not waste more time talking.
Benedict bristled a little as he pulled out the star charts. He addressed Kamak and Dominka.
You have heard about Kypra.
She puffed out her cheeks.
Yes, but I'm not surprised.
Why not?
Kypra was ruled by Garrison Richstar. He was mad, by most accounts. Kept a bodyguard of female warriors about him, named them the Sisterhood. Had a replica of the Imperial Palace built, or at least he started it. Something stopped him.
The Inquisition.
If only they had, then Kypra might still be standing.
Garrison also insisted on commanding the local defence.
Did he have any military training?
No.
Benedict nodded.
Well, that is one advantage we have. The local defence is in my control, and Potence is the planet upon which we will break the Scourged. We have your units and one regiment of Cadians at full strength. That is right, Mia.
Mia nodded quickly.
Yes, sir. The 101st have been brought up to full strength, with units from the...
No need to list them. They're Cadians, enough said. On top of that, we have 50,000 troops inbound on the St. Matthew. They are a mix of Elizabethgrad Hussars, Cyrenian Irregulars, and troops from the Crinan, Phrygian, and Bifrost systems. They should have been here a week ago, but apparently their transport struck an asteroid passing through the circumstellar belt at Waxen Gate. No serious losses, but there was damage to the Gellerfield generator.
Any warships?
Yes.
Benedict listed the ships.
And Potence, I believe, has a fine array of orbital defences.
In theory, yes. Though a grand-nephew of the Pedrizo is in charge of them.
Is he also mad?
Benedict got a wry smile out of the local officer.
No, but I cannot say how well prepared the crews are.
Well, I saw the complement of defence monitors. How many were there?
12, Mia said. I'll find out if they're all operational.
Good. And give me a full breakdown. Orbital defence platforms. Defence lasers.
An hour later, Benedict issued another set of orders for relay from Nullum Apec.
These are called red.
There was a knock at the door. A Vox officer handed Mia a sheaf of Vox communications. He flicked through it and put the file down.
Anything of import?
Mia shook his head.
At last, Bendict said,
Right, I'm going with my gut instincts. I expect an attack on Portence imminently. A move like that would be characteristic of the Scourged. But if they reach this far, then their supply lines will be dangerously thin. We can cut off their supply routes at the Moon of Cinnabar's Folly. We will keep a nominal force here to hoard the Evercity. Any idea how long it will take to patch up the St. Matthew?
Last communications from their shipmaster stated that they expected to make the warp jump within 3 days.
That was 3 days ago. Well, contact them again. Confirm they are ready to make the jump and when they will be here.
When, at last, everything was set in order, Dominka and Kamak led their staff from the room. When they were alone, Bendict drew up a seat and lowered himself into it.
Done?
Mia said. Bendict nodded. He picked the Vox sheaf up and flicked through the pages, looking for anything relevant to his plans. Mia walked across to the drinks cabinet. Through the cut glass windows, he could see a selection of local liquors. The door was a little stiff as he opened it, and the glass tinkled with the movement.
What is there? Bendict said.
Nothing I know, Mia said.
He took a bottle at random, unstoppered the cork, and took a sniff. He poured a little into a narrow glass and took a sip.
Not bad, he said.
Says it's called Myrtle.
Bendict took the glass and drained it, then held it out for another. He felt the liquor burn down his gullet and into his stomach.
Ah, oh, he said, thank the throne we are in the field once more. May I never be promoted again.
Mia poured him another glass.
I think you've managed to guarantee that.
Now, why don't we go up top? The troopers of the 101st have been hanging about the command bunker all day, hoping to get a glimpse of you.
Bendict nodded. Military reunions were mixed affairs. Amongst the old friends, there were the faces that were missing and gone, and the new faces that you did not know, and who did not know you. Bendict finished his drink and steeled himself.
Yes, he said, that would be good.
Chapter 12. Confessor Pitt led the purge of the Tent City with pistol and blade. He gloried in killing, and when a local magister was brought to him, Pitt tore the black top hat from the man's head and pulled it down over his own, adding to the air of menace and horror.
We must seek out the unclean and the unholy, he told his gallants. Bring them to me, and I shall judge their faith.
The young men shouted their war cry, but Karkle put up his hand.
How shall we know them?
Trust your heart,
Confessor Pitt told him, as he pushed the crumpled top hat down onto his head.
The Emperor will guide you.
Karkle led his band from block to block, seeking out the unholy. They grabbed men with tattoos, old women, anyone that they thought looked suspect or frightened. When they brought the prisoners to Confessor Pitt, he marched along the line with chainsword and las pistol, his black top hat at an angle on his head.
Guilty, he declared,
and dispatched each one with either a swing of the sword or a shot to the head. At the end of the line, he spun around.
Where are the others?
The stitches that held the confessor's eyelids back were starting to tug and strain. The bulging eyeballs fixed on Karkle.
Is that all? There are no more heretics.
Not that we could find, Karkle told him.
Confessor Pitt strode towards him, revving his chainsword with fury.
You haven't looked hard enough. There are heretics everywhere. Bring them to me, and I will judge them guilty.
They found more heretics. Two men with beards, a sickly youth in tattered silks, a woman, and a crone that she said was her mother.
Take them, Karkle ordered.
As they moved on to the next block, Karkle suddenly realised he recognised this place. It was where he had spent his first night on Portance. It felt like an age ago now. He had gone from a weak and frightened young man to this, a gallant in the Brotherhood, powerful, focused, fearless. The sign was still there, though the house of Mateo was shut.
Open up, in the name of the Emperor, Karkle shouted.
There was no response. He drew his knife and cut a huge hole in the side of the tent. The gallants burst inside. The faces were immediately familiar. The man with the gun stepped before him.
Back, he said.
But the command his presence had once instilled was gone. He was alone now, and Karkle was many. He stepped forward without fear and took the gun from the man's hands.
The Emperor protects, he said. What do you want?
Mateo asked. He still wore his apron, but now, instead of the weary look, his face was an image of terror.
I want heretics, Karkle spat.
There are none here, Mateo stammered. Just victuals and honest men trying to make a living.
Honest men? How dare you judge yourself? Who says you are honest? It is we who decide who is honest or not.
Karkle kicked Mateo to the floor.
You lock your door to the Brotherhood and you call yourself honest. Do you lock your heart to his truth? Darkness lurks in the hearts of the dishonest.
Mateo was shouting a response, but Karkle kicked him again.
Lies, he spat. A viper in our midst. Take him to the confessor.
Mateo clutched at Karkle's legs.
I can explain.
But Karkle kicked him away.
Conversation costs extra.
They went from tent to tent, dragging away whoever seemed unholy. It was a time of screams, beating, shouting, judging. When they found Confessor Pitt hours later, he stood atop a heap of corpses, chainsawed revving. His hands were red, his hat was splattered with gore, and his face dripped blood.
Guilty, he hissed, stamping on the bodies as if he were trying to flatten an uneven carpet.
He staggered over them as they tilted and turned underfoot.
They are all guilty.
He turned and looked back. There were hundreds of corpses heaped before them.
You have done well, brothers.
More? Karkle asked.
The confessor's eyes were mad and staring.
No, we must leave some for the others to judge. The Emperor calls us for another sacred duty.
A file of transports was waiting for them. Confessor Pitt's brigade climbed up into their vehicles.
Up, brother, he said to Karkle. Ride with me. You have a good nose for heresy, and we have a sacred mission.
Karkle stood at Pitt's right hand as the convoy wound its way out of the tent city onto the plains. His top hat remained rammed down on his head.
Where are we going, Confessor?
Pitt turned his wide-eyed gaze on him.
Up there, he pointed, to the mountains.
Why there, Confessor, when there are so many heretics to purge? He pointed towards the Evercity, but they were heading in the opposite direction. Confessor Pitt grinned.
Don't fear. We are part of a much bigger war, my child. A war that has been thousands of years in the planning.
I don't understand.
Confessor Pitt laughed at him.
Good, gallant Karkle. Understanding is for the weak.
Confessor Pitt's brigade crossed the flat plains and began to climb up foothills of the Supramonte. The gradient became steeper with each switchback, and soon the rock face became so steep that the road had been drilled and blasted from the cliff face. The half-track slowed almost to a walk as they went around each hairpin turn. Karkle held his las carbine close to his chest as he was thrown from side to side and prayed. As they climbed higher, the land fell away. Men too timid to address the confessor came to Karkle now.
"What is our mission?"
one man asked. "We are going to kill heretics," Karkle told him.
"I do not like this road," the other man said.
Karkle gripped his shoulder.
"Have faith. The Emperor protects."
That was what they were all saying. But late in the afternoon, as clouds began to gather, the half-track behind them took a corner too wide. There were shouts and screams as it skidded off the road. Stones tumbled into the drop, and the half-track held as the driver slammed the accelerator down. The tracks whirred. Dust engulfed the open carriage. The truck slipped backwards. The others stood transfixed as one side tipped over the edge and dragged the whole thing with it. There were screams as it fell. Men tumbled out as it plunged through the thin mountain air, bouncing on the slopes three times before hitting the road far below them. Karkle pulled his eyes away. He looked to Confessor Pitt for a way to understand this dire omen. Snow had started to fall. The confessor's bulging eyes were expressionless.
"They were weak," he declared.
At the next turn, part of the road had crumbled away. The driver took this bend very slowly. Confessor Pitt remained standing at the front as part of the road gave way. A voice cried out in fear. Confessor Pitt turned on them.
"Who lacks faith?"
He looked to Karkle first. Karkle's face was earnest.
"I believe," he declared.
The confessor nodded. He looked to each of them, and the gallants returned his intent stare, each face defensive with faith and belief. The half-track scraped and ground slowly about the corner. The confessor's gaze held them all. None of them dared show fear. They climbed higher and higher, and the gallants began to hold themselves against the biting winds. But there was no protection here. The clouds grew darker with the fading day. The rain turned to ice. The wind began to howl through rocky hollows. It tugged at the half-track with such force, it seemed that they would be plucked from the mountainside like a rodent in a raptor's claws. The tracks kicked up a cloud of ice crystals, and through the flapping canvas, he saw faces like his own, ruddy, cold, resolute. Confessor Pitt gripped the front railings, glorying in the tumult. The wind whipped at the canvas roofing as the wind drove ice into them. Karkle had never seen snow before or felt such cold, but he did not dare show weakness, did not dare breathe a word of complaint as Confessor Pitt's sermons became increasingly wild. It was as if the storm that darkened the sky above them fed his rage.
"We are the blade of the Emperor, the bludgeon to the faithless. Hear me, brothers, and lock your hearts against our foes. Woe, I tell you, woe to the unworthy, woe to the corrupt, woe to him who pours oil upon the waters that the Emperor has whipped into a tumult. Woe to any who seek to please rather than to appall. Woe to any who are not the chosen."
At last the road began to level out, the bare rock replaced by pine trees standing in silent, black ranks. Karkle had never seen a forest. It seemed a strange, foreboding place that flickered past like a row of iron posts, black against the white of the snow, which kicked up from the whirling tracks. He felt hidden eyes in the shadows. Wild animals were watching. Confessor Pitt seemed oblivious. He had not stopped his sermon.
"Give thyself up to fire. Recall the Emperor's wounds. His woe brings wisdom. He is our lord, our shield, and our knife. Only cowards seek compromise."
Karkle chanted the confessor's words. Other voices joined in, teeth rattling against the cold. He clutched his las rifle, fingers frozen on the wooden butt.
"Doubt is a sign of weakness," Karkle repeated, echoing back each chant. "I shall not question the will of the Lord. I shall crush the enemies of the Emperor.
I shall grind my boot into the faces of our enemies. They have despoiled the throne world. They have betrayed his will.
Struggle now, gallants, Confessor Pitt commanded. Seek out the weak.
They were half frozen, but each of them hurried to obey.
What do you believe?
They demanded through cold, numb mouths.
I believe in the one true emperor. I believe in his holy church and the right of the Fratiris militia to be his strong right arm.
In the truth, brother. In the truth.
Chapter 13. To celebrate the return of General Isaiah Bendict, the quartermaster of the 101st Hell's Last released 3 days' worth of liquor ration. The troopers cheered their general as he came into the mess. Minka stayed at the back as the crowd engulfed Bendict. She looked about. Despite the enthusiasm, the new Cadians were notable by their absence. She found Victor.
Any idea where the others are?
He shrugged.
The barracks? I'm going to go and find them. They're my squad.
Minka grabbed a bottle. She found most of her squad sitting outside the barracks, playing cards. The air was still. It was hot and stifling. A mosquito droned in her ear. Donson had a grin on his face as he scooped up the metal tokens they were using as money. The rest of them had a weary look. The sound of cheering from the mess resonated across the yard. It only added to the air of despondency and isolation. She tried to lift the atmosphere.
Celebration time, she said. Where are your mugs?
They found enough enamelled cups, and she passed the bottle around.
Thank you, Sarge,
Jeremiah said. He blinked at the taste.
Oh, that's good. That's just like home. Know what I mean?
Yes, she said, and slapped the big guy's arm. Jason winked at her. Lasmon drained his in one go. Drino took the bottle without looking at her, passed it on to Emerson. Rustum took it from him.
This is very kind of you, Sarge.
She had stripped down to her undervest. There was a sweat stain between her flat breasts. Her biceps bulged as she took the bottle and poured a shot for Minka and herself, and then tapped mugs.
Thank you for including us, Sarge, she said,
and drained her cup. Minka did likewise. At the end, she said, anyone seen Laptev? They shook their heads.
I'd better find him. I'd leave him be if I were you.
It was Rustum. Minka felt guilty now. It was her responsibility to reach out.
We should include him. I wouldn't bother.
I'll talk to him. It'll be fine. Trust me. Chapter 14. Confessor Pitt called a halt an hour after sunset. The half-track slewed off into knee-deep snow. The gallants stamped it down as the vehicles lined up. Karkle heard howling in the forest. He had no idea what kind of animal made that noise. He had never been so